What's the name of the podcast, Ethan?
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it's not comedy.
It's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be a fucking train wreck.
I wouldn't say that.
Welcome to the pod, Andrew Hamilton.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for having me, boys.
Good to have you on, mate. And you run the pod, aren't you, as well? It's,
I am.
Shit's gone sideways?
Yes. So I've been recording that for about 6 months now. I usually record about once a week. And I just talk to anyone I can find that has an interesting story about their life going pear-shaped and then recovering from it. I have like a whole bunch of people that DM me, particularly guys that have just gotten out of jail, that like, oh, I could jump on. But I'm like, yeah, you had shit go sideways,
you but didn't you,
haven't
do the recovery.
You haven't had the recovery part, mate.
Yeah. Like, there's that.
I'm like, hit me up in another year or two, we'll see.
Yeah. Shit's gone sideways again. You'll never guess where I am.
Yeah. It's still sideways. Right? Yeah. So I try and have people on who have had a clear redemption, rehabilitation arc.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen overnight for a lot of people. But I was trying to brainstorm because I was offered use of this studio in the city, and so I was just like, just come up with an idea for it. And I was trying to think about what was an idea for a podcast that rang true for me, like something that made sense for me to do it.
And
I think the thing for me is I would never have done stand-up comedy, which is like my favourite thing in the world to do, if I didn't go to prison. So that was kind of the genesis of the idea. And then I thought, okay, well, let's try and find people with those common stories of like shit just falling apart and then how they grew as a person from it and persevered. And so I find, I mean, obviously I've had a lot of guys that have done jail time on there, but then I've also had people that have gone through, like had to escape from religious cults like Jehovah's Witness. I've had people that have gone through major health issues like organ failure and comas and almost terminal cancer. And there's a guy that just came on the other week that had like 3/4 of his leg bitten off by a bull shark. So I try and have some variety to the stories.
Just hardened criminals.
Well, it's not a true crime podcast, even though there's a lot of
Well, that's where you're going wrong, Andrew, because that's fucking popular content.
Well, there was a few weeks ago after I was on a true crime podcast called I Catch Killers with Gary Jubelin, which is like one of the, that's run by News Corp, that's one of the best, highest rated true crime podcasts in the country. And after I went on that, my numbers for my podcast went through the roof, like they tripled. Because of that podcast. And so mine shot up the other week. Mine was at like 18 on the true crime list in Australia.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Nice.
Even though I don't think of it as a true crime podcast.
Yeah.
I was on the charts and I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's fucking
so
awesome.
So just some background for people who haven't heard of you. Most of our listeners are comedians, especially out of Sydney and stuff like that.
All 50 of them.
Yeah.
We're crushing.
We're killing the game. We're number 6 in Australia.
We're going to read through all their names right now.
Yeah.
Basically, the open mic list at fucking Lewisham.
Even that list has changed a lot since I started doing
comedy. We were looking at it the other night. I'm like, I don't know any of these people. What's going on?
I've gone back a couple of times recently. I went there to say goodbye to Huey Phillips because he was moving to London.
Yep.
And there was a whole bunch of people getting up to roast Huey, and there was like so many people in the room that I didn't recognise now. And so it's like, I mean, it's cool.
Do you get tricked? You're like, are these audience members? No, they're not.
All new, fresh faces. This is in open mic, right? But it's kind of cool that there's like that. There's constantly new people that are interested in the craft and trying to jump in and get involved.
Yeah.
But then it's also like you're like fuck. Like suddenly there aren't as many people you thought you knew a second ago. But hopefully some of them are progressing to the next steps, you know, and no longer at Crown Comedy.
That's a brutal place.
Hang on.
I got this. Let me run it. Let me roll.
Is this my background story?
Yeah, your background story.
Yeah.
Well, what you said before was that like you would have never done comedy if you didn't go to jail.
Yeah.
Obviously, because fucking selling mushrooms makes a lot more money than comedy.
Yes.
So you would have just kept doing that.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was also that I had wanted to do stand-up comedy when I was like in my 20s, but I was too much of a chicken shit to try it. I also didn't think I had anything to talk about. Like I just...
Yeah.
I might have like had funny premises in my head, mostly wanking related, but
that's where everyone starts.
Yeah, but I didn't have enough fully formed ideas, and I didn't think that I could do it. And it wasn't until I got locked up that I started to think about if I could redo my life, if I could start again from the start, what would I have done differently? And the number one answer was stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
That was the number one answer. And it was, like, not even close for anything else. It was just that.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, fuck, well, I've completely torpedoed my life. I'm in all the news as this massive drug dealer. At that point, I didn't think it was going to be easy for me to go back to a white-collar job.
No.
So I thought, well, what do you got to lose? So I, when I had my house arrest rules relaxed and I could leave the house, I went to an open mic. And I went, my first one, I went to Crown Comedy in Sydney. Would have been start of Feb last year. So start of Feb 2022. And I had to bring my mum along because I was on bail and I wasn't allowed out of the house unless I was in the company of my parents.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it was like you put your name in the bucket and they draw them randomly, but then I had to ask a whole bunch of dudes that I was meeting for the first time if I could go on in the first half because I had to be home for my curfew. You know? And like, you know, they're not no one's jumping at the idea of like letting someone just like cut the queue some other people are going to have to wait till like the 30th in the line and listen to a lot of other very painful 5-minute sets before their turn, right? But then I remember Mitch Parry, that was the first time I met Mitch Parry, telling me that he was out in the smoking room and he heard that there was some guy that got pushed early in the queue and they're like, oh, he has to get home early for his curfew. And he was like, I've got to go see this cunt.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod, Mitch Parry.
Yeah. Fucking legend.
That's so funny, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the first time I did it. And then luckily my bail rules got changed soon after that, where I was allowed out of the house without my parents because it would have been a big ask to be asking my mum or dad, who were both in the like late 70s, to accompany me to Crown Comedy and Seizures gigs and whatever on four nights a week.
Put your parents
right. So that was rules relaxed, but then I still had a curfew, so I had to like always ask if I could go on semi early, at least in the first half, so that I could be home by my curfew, which was at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. So you fucking...
And sometimes it was close, you know. Sometimes it was close. I got home at like maybe like 9:55, and the cops would come and check at like 10:10. So it was Well, particularly when I was close to getting sentenced, the cops started to come quite regularly. Yeah. When I first got my bail rules relaxed, they were coming like once every couple of weeks. But then as I got closer to the sentencing, they were coming like every couple of days.
Yeah.
Because I think that they...
Trying to catch you out.
They were trying to catch me out on something.
Well, they were expecting you to run as well.
Well, no one expected me to run. I think they were just trying to catch me out on a breach of bail because then it makes... it's just an easy argument for them to say that I deserve prison time.
Yeah.
Right? If they say he's been on house arrest but he hasn't been respecting his bail rules, then the judge goes, okay, well, then we don't really count this time that he's been under house arrest. If he wasn't respecting the rules, fuck him, let's send him to prison.
Yeah.
But I was able to have this compelling argument of rehabilitation through comedy, which we had character references for, and that was just a story that a judge had never heard before, so he was curious about that. I'd done a whole bunch of drug tests, like urine tests every few weeks. I was doing alcohol and drug counselling. I had a full-time job. And then we had this narrative that also the serious charges I had against me, particularly for large commercial supply of magic mushrooms and acid, are not the same drugs that are destroying the community compared to like heroin or ice or something like that. And so then we had these comparative sentences to say people that had been charged on similar commercial supply charges for mushrooms and acid, 3/4 of them didn't get jail time.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think there was anyone that had both charges and didn't get jail time. I think I was a very rare fish, but we packaged that all up into one story that made the judge... We were trying to make it as hard for the judge to see there was any benefit to society in sending me back to prison.
Yeah.
Right? And plus, I'd also been in prison during COVID, which was considered to be harder time because there was a lot of times when you were locked in your cell when there was COVID outbreaks.
Yeah.
And then I was also under house arrest for quite a while, which is considered quasi-custody. So all these things, we packaged up into one little bow and then said, hey, do you really think that there's benefit in sending this guy back to prison for a couple of years? And the judge decided no. So I was very lucky because I was wearing in court like 3 pairs, 4 pairs of underwear because I thought I was going back.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways it's a shame I didn't go back because I'm quickly running out of my prison material.
I saw last night.
He's doing
some new shit.
Doing new shit. Non-jail stuff.
Yeah, it's good, man.
Thanks,
good
bro.
To see.
Yeah.
Fucking crushing it. That ADHD stuff's fucking mad.
Thank you. So, yes, that's the next step is I've done that show now about prison, and I did that before I was probably on paper ready to do an hour show just because I felt strongly about the material, and I also thought if I'm still talking about the 4 months I did in prison in a couple of years, I'll fucking shoot myself, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like, I'll be so sick of it. So I was like, I'd rather, in a race against time between being good enough to do it and still feeling strongly about the material, I was like, let's just run it now and hope for the best. And it turned out to go all right.
And that's so insane, dude, that you've got like an hour together after doing comedy for like, what, year and a half.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
We're like four in and I've still got no idea what I'm doing.
We know.
You saw me last night. I'm struggling, dude.
Hey, the submarine bit was going all right.
bit of topical stuff. Yeah, it was fucked.
We got a bloke who's got, he's been working on the same 5 minutes for 4 years and three of them are good.
Three of the minutes are good?
Yeah. So you're just like hearing that, man, like obviously it helps if you can write to a subject or whatever. You've got a heaps big premise, but you're obviously a pretty hard worker too. Like when you were going through what you were going through, you've obviously made the decision, fuck, I do not want to go back to prison and I'll do whatever I can. So like with the drug test, obviously, you know, you're going to the doctors every few weeks.
Yeah.
You're fighting away all of those fucking... Because you're working... Like, when you're in comedy as well, like, there's drugs.
Yeah.
You can do drugs whenever you fucking want. Like, someone's always got something.
I actually had... in Melbourne, I had a few people come up to me at the end of my shows to give me a handshake and gift me drugs.
Yeah.
Which was, like, a really nice gesture. And I had to just give it to my text.
No, but I want that on me.
So I think next year there'll be a queue of techs putting a hand up to tech my shows because...
They know I'm going down to Melbourne.
They might get some free drugs out of it.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah, I'll do your door, man. It's all good.
I've been drug free now for 2 years, and I still drink, but I haven't touched drugs in 2 years, and my mind is a lot better for it. And comedy is my drug now. This is what I get the rush out of. I love doing it. With that guy doing, like you said, 5 minutes and three of them are good. I mean, there's plenty of people I see at open mics that will do the same 5 minutes that doesn't do well multiple times a week, right?
Yeah, it's insane.
And so it's like, well, you can get better as long as you have some kind of self-awareness on what's working, what's not working, right?
Yeah.
Which is why they need the mushrooms.
Or even...
Yeah.
That's what they need. Right?
I think that's probably what helped.
Yeah.
You've got a bit of self-awareness there where you're like, all right, man, I've met the devil. Like, it's all good.
Yeah. This is not scary.
Yeah.
Even if you're doing 5 minutes and it's going okay, but like you're not like crushing, but consider just completely scrapping. Like just test at an open mic or whatever. Just do a completely new five.
Yeah.
Every couple of weeks. The first few weeks that I was doing open mics, what I realized was I did well the first couple of times, but I was doing the same jokes. And what I realized is most of the open mics is mostly comics, and it's mostly the same comics that have seen you the other two nights,
not gonna lie,
three nights, right? So there's a law of diminishing returns. So what I started doing was I was doing like a new five every night for like three nights a week. So I was doing like 15 minutes of new material every week because I just assumed that was a true test. That was a better test of your stuff because you've got to try and make these people laugh, and they're not going to laugh if they're hearing the same shit every night.
Mm.
In the end, I did that for maybe a couple of months before I realized it was just not sustainable. Because it's just physically exhausting to write that much and then also try and memorize a new 5 minutes every fucking night was very hard. And then you're not really like, you're trying to make people laugh rather than trying to make your jokes better. If that makes sense. So I was, there were some jokes that would do well, but I wasn't then going back and keeping to work on them to make them better.
I was just no polish at all.
It was more like just a pure theory test. Like, is this an okay premise? Maybe I should revisit that and actually work on it into an actual joke. I'm still working on myself on what style works best for me because I find it very hard to sit down and concentrate and write jokes a lot of the time. So what I'll do is I'll come up with like a half-baked premise in my phone, and then I'll just like try it loosely on stage. And then if it is something there, then I'll try and like then I'll put in the work.
Yeah.
And to try and craft it into something proper. But what I've noticed recently is when I actually sit down at my desk and force myself to write and do that as a starting point, I can make the joke way better at the beginning. And then I... Because sometimes I've had a half-baked idea, right? And I try it on stage and it doesn't work. And it's because I just... The writing wasn't in it. And maybe the premise was there, but I just didn't say it in the right way.
Yeah.
So that ADHD joke that I was talking about last night...
Yeah.
That was me working my ass off. That took me like a whole day to write. And then I just I felt like if I had done that as just like a half-baked premise on stage, it probably wouldn't have worked. And it also, yeah, once I started writing, I came up with all these other bits to it, which turned it into like a five-minute joke that I now love, right? And that's the process that I think moving forward I need to spend way more time on is like, yeah, if you just sit down and do the writing first, you'll end up with a much better joke that then you can try on stage rather than trying to do it the other way.
Yeah, you find out quickly on stage what's working about it and what's not too, so that you can cut that shit out and go like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work or not.
Yep.
Try it, and then you go, oh,
but
fuck.
Yeah, I think
this is back to front. Like, I've done that before too. Like, you write a joke and you're like, oh, this line should have been before that. If I do that bit before, it's filling a bit of time. It's kind of funny, but it's not the end of the joke.
Like, yes.
You just fucking.
But also, if you're trying to speak out a joke right on stage that you haven't really fully thought through, then you're only thinking about it while you're on stage, and maybe it's a 2 minute joke, right? Mm. So then you're talking about it for 2 minutes, and you're thinking about it, and maybe you'll build up some ideas. Mm. But if you try and fully write that out, and that takes you a couple of hours, then your head is actually in that joke for 10 times longer, way, way, way longer.
Yeah.
And when you're in that space and thinking on it for that much longer, you'll come up with a better product.
And it's way more, like, it's way better when you have a joke that doesn't work at first and you're like, fuck, I know there's something there. Like,
well, it's funny to you when you're sitting there writing it, you're like, this is good.
Yeah. And then you get on stage and it doesn't really work, and you're like, you come back to it the next night and you're writing on it more. I will come home after sets and I'll have a little bit of fucking chemical assistance and then I'll...
Are you admitting to doing drugs on the podcast?
Hey, no. Not
chemical assistance?
Yeah.
Just a couple of bags.
It's natural, actually. It's natural chemical assistance, technically. But
smoking the devil's lettuce.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
I thought we were talking about mushrooms.
Yeah.
My eyes lit up.
Yeah, and then like you come out, you refine it, and then that joke's like, I've had some jokes that were like bombing, which are now my closers.
Oh, great.
Like where you're like, holy fuck, this is a great joke. And people come up and they go, oh, it's a fucking good joke, dude. That's an awesome joke. And you're like, it fucking bombed at first. You're like, god damn, I was tanking like sets with it, like handbraking sets, and now it's like my closer.
That's cool. Yeah, that's definitely a discipline and a skill that I don't really have yet. If I write something and it's not working, I'm not too good at revisiting it and fixing it yet. As opposed to just writing something else.
Yeah.
You know, all these things come with time, I think.
Yeah.
You get a better eye at understanding why the mechanics of a joke, why it's not working, what you can do to fix it. But, yeah, at the moment, I guess I've been fortunate, like, with the jail stuff that I've, like, had so much that if something's not working, I can just be like, oh, that's all right. I've got fucking five other ideas that I think will work better anyway.
Yeah. And look, man, like, you're right. That's like the biggest thing is just sitting down and writing. Like when you first start out, I always say to people, just get onto the microphone and get used to saying words into the microphone. Don't worry too much at the start about like bombing or whatever. That's part of your learning is bombing. Learning how to bomb is like one of the most important skills you can learn as a comedian, is staying cool up there when the entire crowd's silent. And now it's a tool. Now it's a tool because you can say something horrific which will completely fucking kill the crowd.
Yep.
And then you're like, sweet, now my punchline's gonna land harder because they're waiting. They're waiting to see how you're going to react. They can feel the tension in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and he just said something fucked. How's he going to get out of this?
Yeah. And then you hit him with the punchline, and they're like, holy fuck, I didn't even see that coming. Like, and then it kills so much better.
Yep.
But if you're not used to that, if you're not used to dealing with silence with the crowd,
yeah,
it's like,
well,
it's, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's different lessons in it because, I mean, we've all bombed at open mics, right? And I sometimes you can't really take too much away from it because, you know, half the guys aren't really in the mood to laugh or they're too busy in their own head about their set or also, you know, yeah, there's just a million reasons why. Or maybe they've heard you do the same joke fucking 10 times, you know?
Yeah.
So I realised pretty quickly that bombing at an open mic is different to when you're in front of a proper booked audience, and that hasn't happened too often. There was a time I did Magic Mike, and it was like a largely international audience, and they were just not vibing prison related material.
Yeah.
And so,
you're shit out of luck in that.
Yeah, and so sense. I think maybe whatever country is there from, there's people from like India and China or whatever that obviously prison and crime is considered a bit more serious compared to Australia where we have that kind of larrikinism to crime, you know, people like Chopper Reid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was like bombing for like the first 4 minutes or so. It was just like this, like very light chuckle, and I remember just this cold sweat,
yeah,
rolling down my head. And in my head, I was just hearing myself go, "You are dying, cunt.
Yeah,
you are fucked." And I had this whole bunch of dating material that I was gonna try at the end, and so I was just like, "Fuck, bring it out now." And so I started doing it. And immediately started getting laughs. And I got a good amount of laughs for about 3 minutes on that stuff. And then I was able to say, look, I'm going to... that was some new stuff that I was working on just to prove that I can do non-jail material. I'd like to take you back to jail now. And by that stage, I had him on board and was able to finish. And I remember when I walked off, Anthony Skinner patted me on the back and he goes, "You saved yourself." And I was like, thank fuck that I had that at my disposal. And I think that's another skill set is like just being able to have enough jokes that if things aren't working well with the game plan you had, switch it up, try something else.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I felt very fortunate that I had at least a few non-prison jokes just to wheel out, just to fucking dig myself out of the hole that I was putting myself in.
Have you got a go-to joke? Is like, I call it a parachute joke. Like if I'm fucking dying on my ass, I'm like, or if shit goes sideways, I'll be on like Tuesday. I was hosting the open mic, and I just hit this point on stage where I crowd worked a bunch of people over there, and it got a bit awkward. And I was like, fuck, it just threw me. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And I'm just like crowd working a guy over this side, thinking of the next thing. And I'm like, all right, I've got this joke locked and loaded. Like I've always got one in the back of my head. Like that's my escape route joke.
Yeah.
Do you have any like that? Like, that's my fucking go-to.
I don't think I have any particular escape route jokes because it's I've done most of my stuff enough times with such a good strike rate that most of it I don't need to worry about that too much. But there are a couple of jokes that I have that only kind of work half the time. And so I need to just make sure I put it somewhere between some like certified winners.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I don't want to have like two misses in a row. There's a joke I have about being at a set of traffic lights and having a cop car right behind me. And ask, you know, have you ever had that and felt like you were doing something wrong? And I say, that happened to me about a year before I went to prison. I was at a set of traffic lights and I had a cop car right behind me. And I just felt in my gut like I'd done something wrong. And I had to say to myself, Andrew, you're a massive criminal. Like, you're on your way to a drug deal right now. Like, you are doing something wrong. And I said, that much made me feel so much better. And so sometimes, like, I'll get a sense from the audience, like, whether I think that they're up for that joke.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, when it hits, it usually hits hard.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it's, like, only 10% of the audience will be on board.
Yeah.
But luckily, it's, like, a 20-second joke, right? So, If it doesn't work, I'm like shown into a fucking pedophile bakery or like what, you know, I'm talking about something else. So that I know works with like a 90% strike rate.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not a huge loss, and you don't lose the crowd over that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's much, it'd be much worse if you did like a drawn out 3-minute joke that then didn't pay off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just ask him about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
You know those jokes you were saying about 50-50? Yeah. He's got a lot of them.
So like, then not only like are they like, they're not laughing, but they're also annoyed because they're like, I listened to that for that. Like,
yeah.
I paid attention for all that for such a fucking shit payoff. Whereas if it's like a 20-second throwaway joke and they're like, all right, what else we got here? You know?
Yeah.
The problem, like, your jokes are fucking good. They have a good payoff, but just not a lot of people are into it. Like, it's the type of humor that, like, it's just some people like that type of comedy, some people don't. And if they're not up for it, they're really not up for it.
Oh, yeah,
but
dude.
If they're into it, they're like, yes, that's fucking great.
So it got out at work that I'm a comedian. Like,
I was just scrolling through on Spotify your list of recent podcasts, and I saw one that said specifically that. Mitch's work found out that he does comedy.
Yeah. So I'm like, so it got out. My name was on a poster for a show. Chick from work hits me up. She's like, are you a comedian? I was like, yeah, but I don't advertise it at work. Like, I keep my professional life separate to my comedic life.
So, anyway, yeah, so she said she realised.
So it's got out, and then it's, like, slowly got around the office, and then my boss is like, oh, I mentioned something else about the weekend. She's like, oh, I heard you're a comedian. And I was like, yeah. I said, I don't recommend anyone ever watch my comedy. I'm like, that's if I'm being honest with you, I don't recommend that you watch my comedy.
That sounds like a red rag to a bull, though.
Like, yeah, I know.
If I'm working with someone and they're like, do not watch my comedy, I'll be like, when are we going? I'll be like, gathering the whole team.
Well, no, because that means like, all right, cool. If you're going to still turn up after that, you're down. So anyway, they turn up. I have
how many of them came?
It was only like one, but it was like my immediate just my immediate supervisor,
male
the one
female.
Female.
Oh my god.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. So anyway, so I've they meet me outside the club. We're waiting for the place to open. She introduces me to her husband.
Was this at this venue?
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And then I'm like,
sorry, how long ago was this?
It's like 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I meet him. I'm sorry for what you're about to watch. He's like, oh, I'll like it. I'm like, look, I go, you might not. I said, this is very specific. Type of people that like my comedy and they fucking love it, but those who don't, they fucking hate it. So that's your warning. We come inside, have a good set. Everything's all hunky dory. I'm walking past. She's just not making eye contact with me.
She's not making eye contact
with me. I'm like, all right, see you later. No meetings with HR. She's like, no meetings with HR. Hasn't made eye contact with me since. Doesn't like nothing. And I'm just like, well, I warned you. Like, I warned you. I specifically said no one should watch my comedy.
What kind of subject matter are we covering? Because it's going to cause this reaction.
I've got jokes about orphans getting fucked by Amish people. And I've got a joke about a stroke victim.
So good jokes.
Yeah, they're fucking great jokes. If you hear them, they're great jokes. But people don't.
But,
yeah, oh, they're man. High risk. So, like, it either, like, because some people are like, oh, I've got family members who had stroke. My joke is about a family member who had a joke, like I had a stroke. So it's like, whatever.
You
like,
just had a stroke.
Yeah, I did. I'll do that.
You just had a joke.
Yeah, so it's like, whatever. They're like, they're high payoff punchlines.
She's like the person we were talking about at the start who got warned 3 times then shot. That was her.
Yeah.
Like, you had enough warning.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I can't be mad. Like,
Yeah.
You did warn me.
Did she come with her partner or something?
Yeah. And his kid. And I think her sister. And some other people, and I was like,
that's crazy.
Yeah, so I was like, it's not good.
No.
But it's like, fuck, whatever. Like, yeah, probably should have waited till my probation was over, but anyway.
Do you deal with anything like that shit with your work?
They all know that I do comedy, and a whole bunch of them have come to see my shows. They're fully behind it.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
They love it.
Yeah.
They've been really cool about my background and hiring me, and they're awesome. They came to my last show at the Sydney Comedy Festival, and a bunch of them have been to like 3 or 4 of my gigs now. It's awesome. I mean, and they also don't try and pushed me in the office like, oh, what's the gag here, mate?
You know, what are you talking about this week?
Comedian, you know, it's just like, they just treat like a normal person.
I don't get any of that, thank fuck. Though one of them asked
an Amish person comes into the office and your boss is like, what are we?
Yeah, one of them's like, what will happen if I heckle you? I was like, I will fucking destroy you. I was like, I looked him dead in the eyes. I'm like, I'll fucking say the meanest thing I can think of in the moment. I said, because I'm not fucking around. He's just like, because otherwise, if I say, oh, I'll try and make a joke, if you play it down, they'll come to a show and heckle me just to see. And the total honest truth is, I'll probably just panic and just completely ignore them. That's exactly what will happen. But I tell everyone, I'll fucking destroy you. Because they've seen. Oh,
speaking of hecklers, dude, this fucking dude last night. So we'll talk about last night. It was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Power outage in the comedy club.
Blackout around the whole block, right?
Just here, the kebab shop and the convenience store. So they're all on the same switchboard. Fucking went down.
I just arrived, must have been just after, 7:30 when the show starts?
Yeah, about 7:30.
We're
trying to clear the bar to kick off.
Like, you don't realise how dark it is in this room until none of the lights work.
Yeah.
Right? It was just complete darkness. Then people had phones out. But then there was like, fucking, how many people were here? 70 or something? They were just sitting here. And then the bigger problem was that the bar wasn't operating because there was no power. And so it was like a race against time to have a solution before people got agitated about the fact that they were sobering up.
In Newcastle, that's a problem.
So it was just like we would try. Elliot did an amazing job at trying to scramble and troubleshoot all the problems. So the first problem was how to get the bar back operating, right?
Yeah.
So then we're like, okay, hotspot. If you can hotspot the fucking payment system, then even in the darkness, they can still run the bar.
Yeah.
So that was like problem one. Then they fucking, Brady came and had, luckily he works in film and he had battery operated lighting system.
Doing a lighting course that day.
Yeah.
What are the fucking chances?
Battery operated lighting system and portable and speaker.
Yeah.
So that they could have the show work without any actual fucking power to the building.
So I'm downstairs, like I'm running around like a headless chicken. Up here in the storage cupboard, there's like a bunch of switches in there, so I flicked all them off. I'm on the phone to Adam, who's did all the electrical work for it. He's my roommate, so I'm like, surely he'd fucking know what's going on. He's got no idea.
Adam Ronan, useless cunt.
Cunt is pissed at the pub, just like, nah, it's your problem. I'm like, fuck, all right.
Classic Ronan reaction.
He's like, I can get someone out there, but it might be a few hours. Just like classic fucking tradie.
And
it could have been. It honestly could have been.
Yeah.
Like, it was the truth. It was like, we're fucked. If Brady hadn't shown up with gear, we were fucking no-showing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm down there talking to the kebab guy. It's just like, if he's got anything crazy to just turn anything on, like trying to sort it out, trying to flick on fuses and shit like that. Turns out there's like this big thing that you have to like rotate one way and rotate the other way. It's like some old fucking thing down there. Crazy, crazy shit. But anyway, the power did come back on like halfway through the show, but we were like, we're just going to run it for the rest of the show the same way because we can't just swap over now.
Yeah, and you did a great job as MC under those conditions.
Dude, that was fucked. Yeah, so I'm serving at the bar, trying to clear the bar. Like, I come back up after we're just like, oh, we might have to call this show. Brady's setting up the gear. I'm like, all right, the show's still going ahead. Let's clear the bar, serving people. And then fucking old mate over here. So he comes up with the girl that he's with. They order two shots of tequila to start with. Both have one of them and order a Jack and Coke to go with it. And I'm just like, all right, these cunts are down to drink. Like, that's cool, whatever. He comes back, orders three JD and Cokes. And I'm like, all right, this cunt's cut off. Like, he's just going to be a fucking problem. And he was.
Yep.
Because he's like hitting up Elliot and Brady. And I had no idea about this in the break. Well, the break. When it was fucking lights off, he's like, oh, do you want me to just get up and just tell some jokes while you're getting everything sorted? And they're like, no, don't fucking do that under any circumstance. Like, that's the worst thing you can do. Didn't listen to that.
No.
Didn't take that advice on board.
No. Fuck you.
We're just about to get the bar cleared. I'm just about to go up. And he gets up and just starts telling fucking internet jokes.
But this was after Elliot had come up and said, like, the show's going ahead, explain to everyone that it was happening and all this kind of stuff. So if there was any need for him to do it, that had
it was
passed.
Gone.
Like, the time for that had been and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, some idiot yelling out in the darkness probably could have got away with it.
Yeah.
But We had the show ready to kick off, and then he carried on like a pelican, telling some shit joke about having tattoos on his dick that we've all read on the internet before.
Yeah.
And then I think then he was a smart ass to Brady, and he was just like, yeah.
Yeah, mate. Well, Brady came up to him and he's like, you asked me, and I said no, and now you're doing it. Yeah. Please fucking stop.
Yeah.
Just sit down and enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And then he was like, not having that. Yeah. He was like, fuck you. Like, I saved it. Like, he was getting lippy with Brady, and Brady's like, yeah, okay, fuck off then. Yeah. Like, you're out. Yeah. He could have stayed. Like, he would have been fine.
Yeah.
Like, even though he did that crazy shit.
If he just sat down and shut up.
If he had,
and
like, yeah, fair enough. All right. Like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Fair's fair.
But usually when someone is at the point when they're going to do the first part, they don't stop there, right?
No, yeah, no, he would have been a problem. He would have been a problem.
When you want to be the center of attention, you don't just do it for a second and then pack it in.
Yeah,
and
goes, no, good call.
Let's keep the good times rolling, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly when you've had a couple of shots of tequila and some J's. You're not thinking, like, this is my 5 minutes of fame. You're thinking, I'm going to be the star for the whole night.
So
That's exactly what he thought. He's like, I'm a fucking legend.
Yeah,
I was just waiting till the boys on site hear about this.
Yeah.
I was better than the comedians.
So I'm serving behind the bar, and Elliot comes up and he's just like, can you just go up there now? Like, just start it.
Yeah.
And this guy's still going.
Mm.
And I'm just like, all right, fuck. Just had to fucking go up, cut this guy off, tell him to shut up. It was just so awkward. Just oh my fucking God.
So I added video, like, because I was just trying to video what the scene looked like as you had started while Brady was still herding this fucking idiot out of there. And it was like noisy and distracting, and you were just plowing through.
Oh, dude. The amount of plowing.
I think you did well, and I think everyone to perform. Did well, I think, considering
so fucking well,
the setup. It was everyone crushed. It was a hot and hot crowd. Considering it was all like jerry rigged fucking gear.
Yeah, the speaker had like a delay, like a half second delay.
Mm.
So I didn't realize I was a good 5 minutes in, just screaming at the crowd.
Yeah,
because I was just trying to get everyone under control. Because I'm like, this guy's causing a fucking scene. The crowd did get on my side when we. Sang fucking na 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 goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was good.
That's always a good one. Whenever you get someone kicked out of a show, that's the anthem.
They were happy to see him go.
Yeah.
After it was like pretty loud to start with, and the speaker wasn't very loud.
Yeah.
The PA. So like everyone's talking and shit. I'm like, oh, they can't really fucking hear me. And then when they quietened down and I started to like get them on side with some jokes, like I was like, oh, there's a delay in this speaker. And it was like fucking with my head. Like I'm like trying to talk into it. It's like being an announcer at the fucking races where you just like hear your voice echoing. And
is it a delay or am I bombing?
Yeah.
I'm going to blame the delay.
Yeah.
It was just the echo of no laughter.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Hello. That fucking delay got me, mate.
Right.
I would have had a hot one otherwise.
Fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was happy to get up there, take some bullets at the start because, fuck, it was rough.
And it was funny, like, watching us scramble when Elliot was like, oh, we're going to forget about the break. We're just going to soldier through.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it made more sense under the circumstances. The show had started so late.
Yeah.
And we're all still at the risk with the power outage of, like, losing the crowd at any moment, right? So I think
the batteries could have run out.
Everything would have just died. Yeah, I think we were on a good wicket. It was like, it made no sense to just, to have a quick pause.
Yeah.
Like, let's just survive the night.
Let's open it up for another crowd member to get up and do some more internet jokes.
Oh, yeah. And they were drinking last night.
There was a group of English fellows that were at the back. There was about eight of them. And they used to buy magic mushrooms off me.
Oh.
Yeah, they're like, holy shit, it's Hammo. We're like, we thought you were dead. And then I just pop up at some Newcastle comedy club. They're here on a stag do. They're here for a Bucks party. And then they were all like, holy shit, man. Like, we fucking hadn't heard from you for years. And we've been saying to our mates, we're really worried about you. Like, what happened? And I'm like, well, have I got a story for you? That happens to me a fair bit. So I'll bump into someone and I'll be like, holy shit, man, what happened?
Yeah, because you were the man at one point.
I was.
Mushrooms,
I was selling to a lot of people.
You said you were growing them yourself as well?
My mate was, yeah.
Oh, right. So you didn't have much to do with the growing, you can't say? Or
What?
Did you have much to do with the growing, or you can't say?
No, that? I mean, I didn't, only because he has like a far more analytical brain than I did. Right. I don't really understand the science behind
That's
it.
What
I don't have the patience
it's
for
fucking
it.
Difficult.
Yeah, it's very fiddly. You've got to get so many things right under lab conditions just to grow them perfectly. So he was much better at that. I was just the sales guy.
Yeah.
I'm good with people. good customer service.
Yeah.
And so that's how we built it up from a side, from just like a hobby over 15 years to being like a massive earner.
Yeah.
So that's why I knew a lot of people from that.
The crime side of it aside, but like things are going well for you.
Right? Yeah.
You're making bulk money.
I don't know about bulk money.
Well, you're making good money. You're making okay money. Right? What do you buy? What's the first thing, like when you've got your first, where you're like, holy fuck, I'm pretty flush with cash
like
right
any
now.
Drug dealer, sneakers.
Yeah. Oh, it took about back when I was
when you were doing it. Like, what's the first thing you buy? Like, when you've got money, what is the first thing you buy?
Man, I mean, my vices were usually just like coke. I spent so much on coke. I was doing about 10 grand of cocaine up my nose a week.
Fuck Christ.
Then
I wasn't making good money, but 10 grand a week on coke.
Yeah.
I thought you meant now. No, I thought you meant now. As a comedian.
Yeah,
no, I'm not making good money now. Back in the day. Yeah, great money.
Yeah.
So what were my vices? Gambling, cocaine, sneakers. I used to be a massive sneakerhead. Yeah. I used to buy a lot of rare Air Jordans.
Yeah.
And then eating out, I'd go to like fancy restaurants and just drop like fucking stupid money on like $1,500 bottles of red wine and champagne. I'd go to places and drink a bottle of Cristal for no reason for $1,000 just because it was like the money stops making sense. You're like, this doesn't mean anything because I can make 20 grand tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, so who cares? It's like Monopoly money.
Yeah.
You just don't, and because you think that it's going to last forever, you don't put any aside for a rainy day. You just think, like, I've got a money tree, right?
Yeah.
It's going to regrow tomorrow. Just do dumb shit. And so I would do that constantly.
Yeah.
So that's how you get to my stage and you've got nothing to show for it other than some
How nice good is that, though? Like, realistically, how good is that $1,500 bottle of wine? Not...
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's not $1,500 amazing.
True. If you only had $1,500, then it's like this
it's
was
a bad
stupid.
Deal.
Yeah.
But like if you're making 50 grand a week and you spend $1,500 on a bottle of champagne, bottle of wine, you're like, "Oh, this is really nice." And it's like it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's just like it's also like a status thing. You like to be able to be there having these conversations with the sommelier about what are your recommendations and just acting like a total fucking cashed up wanker.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know. It's you get swept up in just being a complete flog.
Yeah.
So now all I have left is a bunch of nice pairs of Air Jordans. And
nothing wrong with them, man. Yeah, I noticed them on the way in.
I'll have
nice
another
shoes,
pair out for the show tonight. So, but I don't know. You just, when the money comes easy, you find a way to spend it easy. And you don't really respect the money.
That's the same at all levels, though. Like, I was talking to Ethan before. I was like, I used to, before my job now, like, I was in a pretty fucking high stress job, but it paid really, really well. I was on like 6 figures salary, great money. And I was like, fuck, dude, it was awesome. Because you could just do whatever you want. I'm like, I didn't have to worry about bills. Nothing. I was eating out every day. Absolutely not 50 grand a week sort of money, but like decent middle income wages. And now, like, I've effectively halved my wage and I'm still living the same. It's just I don't buy that dumb shit. And I was like, fuck, man. Like,
are you happier now, though?
Way happier.
Yeah.
Yeah, way happier.
See, like, that's the thing. Because I'm broke and I live with my parents, and I'm happier now than I was before.
Yeah,
That $1,500 bottle of wine doesn't fucking buy you happiness.
Well, man, the coke, I was just like just doing that just to numb myself out because I didn't like the version of myself that I was. So to escape, I was just constantly shoving powder up my nose every day of the week until I was just a fat toad with a bunch of fake friends that, like, you know, aren't there as soon as shit hits the fan. And, so the whole life was just not real. And so now I have, you know, genuine friendships. I like the version of myself I am. And I live with purpose that I have never felt before, right?
Yeah.
I love getting up and making
rooms of strangers laugh most nights of the week. Like, that's my favourite thing to do in the world. And none of that would have happened if I didn't go to jail.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I guess, like, you see a lot of people who go through an experience like that and use it as a tool to grow versus what a lot of, like, younger guys who end up in there.
Mm-hmm.
They just get caught up in the system.
Well, yeah, I mean, this becomes a massive cycle of crime for a lot of guys. Mm. You know, in the yards I was in, particularly at Long Bay, I think I was one of two guys out of 80 that was in prison for the first time.
Yeah.
Everyone else was, you know, repeat offenders. Some of them were, like, regulars. Like, it's like fucking... I think they're about to get a free stay or something like that on their loyalty card because they're like fucking like up to their fifth, sixth time in there. Like,
because they just know the world.
Well, I mean, there's so many factors. Like, the one, I mean, a lot of them don't get enough support when they get out, or two, like, they don't have a support network when they get out of friends and family getting around them. So the only people they really identify with are the guys that they've done jail time with, which means if you're only hanging around with ex-cons, and the likelihood of you reoffending is probably way higher. Then for some of these guys, they're so used to prison and they know that they're fine in there, or in some ways they're more used to that life. Then what's the downside of, like, what's the risk to them of doing a crime, taking a risk? They might get away with it 10 times before they get caught and go back to prison, but they're like, oh, well, then I just go back to a bunch of blokes that I know anyway.
Yeah. Consequence isn't as high for them.
Look at the Aboriginal community. Most prison wings are 30% Aboriginal men, right?
Yeah.
It's like a family fucking reunion. Yeah. And so for them, some of these guys have more power and respect in prison than they do on the outside. So, like, what's the punishment to them? Like, they're going to go back to crime if, like, some reason, for a lot of them, they feel more at home in prison than they do in the real world. Like, we need to do something about that.
Yeah. Dude, credit to you. Like, not trying to blow you or anything. Credit to you that you just
can,
like,
try and blow me.
he's been the
first.
I mean, look, that wasn't my... Yeah. That was different to my experience. I never got bashed or threatened in any way. I got treated really well, actually. And I had a pretty good time in there. I was just playing touch footy and cards and exercising and sunbaking and just talking shit with a whole bunch of other guys that was, like, similar to me, you know, in there for drugs and stuff like that, but non-violent guys.
Yeah.
Just like to laugh and just didn't respect the law and got caught, you know? Mm. That was there's a lot of guys like that. Obviously, I in the yard I was in at Long Bay, there was probably about, I think it was about 25% of the guys, 20, 30 guys were in there for murder or something like that. But a lot of these guys, like, did this shit when they were, like, either drunk or on drugs or, like, fucking, you know, just like that they're not the version of themselves that they are when they're clean and in a yard full of a bunch of other guys, you know?
Yeah.
I never really felt in danger in any particular way. I found jail is easy, real life's hard, you know? I didn't have to worry about rent or food bills or anything. Although your only job is to survive the next day.
And
so I found it much more relaxing than the real world.
Yeah.
When you get out and you're like, fuck, how am I going to keep a roof in my head and all this kind of shit? Sometimes you can just be suffocated by all these stresses of just trying to live.
How people turn to other shit.
Yeah.
Like, those stresses is why you just, like, oh, I'm going to fucking sell drugs.
Yeah.
Because that's going to get rid of that stress of, like, how am I going to fucking afford all this shit?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got this little thing on the side. I'm selling some mushrooms and shit and then...
Well, there was that guy on the northern beaches, Desik Darko, whatever his name was, who had escaped from prison decades before. And during COVID, he only ever worked cash and hand jobs, and that all dried up during COVID. So he was, like, living on the streets, and he was like, fuck it, I'd rather just be in jail. So he handed himself back in after decades.
Yeah.
Because he was like, at least I'll get food and shelter in prison.
Fuck. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's crazy.
A fucked up situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, fuck, shit's fucked. I'm going back to prison.
Yeah. I've heard that story a couple of times, though, like, where not someone who's been on the run for decades, but guys who get out and they're like, yeah, this isn't worth it. And, like, also, like you were saying, they don't have the support networks. And when a lot of them go in, None of their payments stop or anything like that. And people are just living off their Centrelink while they're in there, and like people are stealing money from them left and right.
Why won't you get your job seeker appointment? Well, well, funny story.
Yeah.
Actually, that's true. Because when I got out and I was under house arrest for like 6-8 months, I got Centrelink, but then I didn't have to go apply for any jobs, right? Because I'm like, I'm under house arrest. Like, what do you expect me to do?
Yeah.
So I was like, this is way easier than having to go and try and be on Centrelink like a normal
jump through all the hoops.
Like a normal sucker. Yeah. Just like, get yourself under house arrest, boys, and it's a much easier life.
Yeah. So when you went in as well, like, my biggest fear of prison is... I'm too small.
Well, like, you've got a cute face and mouth. I think you'd be very popular.
Well, that's the problem. Yeah. that's also the problem.
Look at you, boy.
Yeah.
Feel like a pig.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the problem. I'm like, fuck, man. I'm just too small and too nice. I'm like, but it doesn't sound like. I suppose if you're not like in there looking for trouble. There is ways to avoid trouble and stay out of trouble when you're in there.
But you also, if someone doesn't look like they can stick up for themselves, they'll be in trouble. Because there are guys that had similar looks to you that you saw guys just go straight in their cell when buy up day came, when they get like $100 worth of groceries, like it's all kind of good stuff. They go straight in and just grab it. And they'd be like, what are you doing? And then just bang, bang. Bang, bang, like just bash them and rob them because they know that they're not going to stick up for themselves.
Yeah.
So.
In that case, just don't buy shit. There you go.
Don't buy shit. It's tricky. But, do you find, even if a guy's going to lose a fight, if they stick up for themselves, they'll get respect.
Yeah.
And I find people might come and back them up.
Yeah.
That happened to me. There was a guy I got along really well with that got beaten up for some of his stuff. And I said to my cellmate, oh, fuck, I want to go, like, stick up for him. And my cellmate was like, only help those that help themselves. He was like, everyone's got to do their own jail. You know, if he's not willing to fight for himself, then you can't do it for him. I took that to heart because if I just did it on his behalf without him doing it, it would have made me a target. For no reason.
And I guess then you're lucky you had a cellmate who was obviously smart enough to be like, don't jump in for that bloke.
A lot of guys, have been in there for enough times to just know the way that the politics works.
Yeah, someone threw a fake shit in his cell, just as a joke. But he was standing there and he's looking at the shit and he's like, well, I can't not fucking lose my mind here because otherwise everyone will start shitting in my cell. So he just had to walk out into the middle of the fucking block. And he was in like segregation with all the fucking nutters who just can't stay out of fights and stuff like that, because that's what he is. And he's like, he just had to call the whole cell out. Who fucking did it? Who fucking did it? And it was like the block boss who did it. So then fucking huge fight. Bloke like tried to stab him with a broken broomstick. He's like, turn you into a fucking fountain, cunt. Like, that's what he said to him. And like, he had this huge fight. And then like, Clint's just like managed to get through to him. Like, all right, I'm done. I've had enough. And the bloke's like, it wasn't even a real shit. And just walked off. What the fuck did you expect me to do, mate? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I had no choice. It was just one of those situations where like, well, it's see what happens.
Yeah, respect's a big thing in there. You know, even if it's a fake shit, it doesn't matter. It's like someone's tried to disrespect you. You can't let it slide, or it becomes a slippery slope.
Yeah. He has some fucking wild stories. Just like the things you see. Like just blokes. Like he ended up getting jumped in the showers, and the bloke snuck up on him and like busted his nose straight away. He's telling the story. And then, like, fought back. It all got broken up. And then, like, after that, he goes, all the older guys just, like, went and found that bloke and fucking gave him a hiding and then he had no more problems after that. So it's like, in that instance, it's like, all right, it's kind of good, but I'd fucking rather not be there.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not worth it.
Yeah, well, all those kind of things happen so quickly, you know, in 2 seconds, some guys run into a room or a shower and just pump the fuck out of someone. And, like, I remember just being halfway through cooking, like, some toast and then turn around and it was just, like, a pool of blood on the fucking floor, like, a few metres away from me where some guy had just been pumped. And, like, you just, you miss it. Like, in the, just, your back's turned bang. It's just, like, gone.
He's running your schnitzels through the toasting machine. And he's like, oh.
Someone next to me was like, holy shit, did you see that? I'm like, nah, but my toast is burnt.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Chaos going on around you.
Well, you had to, because these toasters had like really shit elements on it. So you had to like sometimes run it through like three times to get it to like the right level of cookedness. And so, I was too busy with the toaster and. Yeah, three Koori blokes had pumped some Middle Eastern dudes, and
it happens.
Happens every day. Yeah,
just blokes being blokes.
Yeah, it's a couple of guys having a laugh, and one guy not having a laugh.
Yeah.
It was funny. like when the guards would come in. Like after there was like a instance of like major violence where they'd come in with a whole squad, guys that got shields and whatever, and they'd stand in formation, everyone's standing in front of their cells, and they'd be like fucking 15 of them, like, we mean business.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, boys, if there's one more vicious assault in here this week, no one's getting their buy-up food. You know, no one's getting it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the big threat.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You are not going to get your groceries if someone gets stabbed. And everyone's like, oh, fuck, all right.
Best all right, no more stabbings, boys. All right. Gentlemen's agreement.
I guess, you know, I want my Kit Kat. So nice. So yeah, I guess we better not stab anyone for a couple of weeks. So
Yeah.
And then someone will be like, I remember there was a guy in a cell next to me. Just, we're all standing there serious. And then he's like, oh, miss, what if it's one-on-one? And then everyone's like, yeah. Like, yeah, good question, Dave. What if it is one-on-one? Like, you know. And it's so funny to see, like, 80 dudes, like, sitting for their cells, like, just laughing about some guy's just been stabbed and laughing because you're like, well, I mean, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in prison.
Yeah.
Just trying to entertain ourselves. There's very little activities.
Do you think that's half the problem?
Boredom.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't help anyone. There's many factors. In some of the wings I was in, there'd be too many guys, not enough working phones. And so phones, people like to call their family and loved ones. When there's less phones, there becomes a lot more tension. That creates a powder keg where guys will just set it like, they'll go off if they can't make phone calls.
Yeah.
They want to make multiple in a day and you're some nobody, then they'll try and push in front of you, right? And if you don't stick up for yourself, then soon you'll be pushed in front of every time you're on the phone.
Yeah. So if you're in there, it's worth, like, if someone fucks with you, it's just worth fighting and copping the beating.
It's worth losing a fight than not fighting at all.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Because at least then you'll get some respect. They'll be less likely to test you. Whereas if they know that you'll fucking fold every time, they'll just walk away.
Dude, that's exactly high school. It's exactly the high school he went to. It was like, I used to get bullied until I started fighting back and then it was all right. It's like, it's weird how, like, like teenagers that fucking, I don't know, it's like almost, it's like monkey brain almost about it. It's just like, whatever, we're just here. We're all reacting and fucking.
Yeah. And it's also rules. Like guys just like, you know, they think it's street cred. They think it's tough. Like, they look cool if they're tough.
Yeah.
So like, there's a whole bunch of fucked up psychology to it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I was lucky enough to dodge it. I just tried to keep pretty low profile and just, you know, made mates with people and you know, had enough of a crew that I never looked like a target.
Yeah. And you weren't like, also, you're in there for like a decent, you're in there for mushrooms and you weren't like, you didn't dog anyone or anything like that. So it was like, they that's another thing as well. They know what you're in there for. Like, yeah. They get your record.
Well, I was very happy that I was all over the news, right? Because I was easily Googleable. So it reduced the risk of anyone mixing me up for someone else.
Yeah.
Even the guards. Like, I mean, I was working in a packaging factory and he was like, Hamilton. He's like, turned over his screen and it was like my story in the Daily Mail, like where it was like, party drug king. And he's like, is this you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, sick. that was a screw.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to be fucking like helping guys with jobs in there that are like fucking in there for fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
pedophilia or.
Or anything like that. Or even like just, I don't know. Fucking vehicular manslaughter or fucking anything. You know, some guy's in there fucking selling fucking mushrooms and MDMA. It's like, all right, this guy's not a villain.
Yeah. He's not, like, super evil. He didn't kill a child.
Nah,
it's fine.
It's a guy that, like, just forgot to, like, stop partying.
Yeah. Or a guy that saw an opening in a market and really just took advantage of it.
He's like, what if we just add great customer service to drugs? Business model.
Do you want a job?
Wait, at your work?
Yeah, dude. You'd be great on the phones. It'd be sick.
Yeah, I'll get your boss to come see me do some jokes.
Yeah.
I'd love that. I don't think you can work in banking if you've got a record, can you?
No, you can't.
They do a lot of thorough fucking checks.
No, they don't, but you're not supposed to. They didn't Google me and find 150 podcasts where I'm talking fucking absolute smack.
Well, that's the thing. You put out enough that they can't be bothered going through it.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. They've seen all the fucked up things I've said.
They've got to find the N-word in the haystack. That's what
they're searching for. I've started being recognised by, like, some of our clients for a company I work for, but not for my stand-up, for, like, those dad jokes videos that I do on the internet.
Yeah.
I had, like, I had, like, this French client on a call recently who was like, Andrew, at the lunch, will you do any dad jokes?
Nice.
Maybe, mate, if you're paying me more. But, so that was pretty funny. But
it was pretty fucked what happened with Steph with that thing. She's fucking going through a rough time. But
yeah, it was.
Like you said, in fucking prison, it's the same shit out here. If you don't stick up for yourself and fucking say, like, this is fucked, good honour for, like, not just fucking wearing it. And
totally.
Actually fucking standing up for herself and going, like, nah, this is actually fucked.
Yeah.
Like, this is a problem that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, it was a shit situation, and I think no one could have anticipated that when we just went to a studio just to do some dumb jokes to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, no one expected the channel to blow up in the way that it has as well. But, it was shit, and, you know, hopefully it's something that Steph can move forward through soon.
Yeah, I fucking hope so, dude. She's one of the funniest. She's so fucking good.
She's the best.
And works harder than fucking anyone. Like, the amount
funny
of
and so generous
does.
With her ideas. I mean, my show for the Melbourne Comedy Festival was only good because Steph helped give me some guidance in terms of structure and the ending. So, you know, she's so amazing for the Sydney comedy scene. So.
Yeah. And, like, I did a gig with her. It was either my set or, you know, RJ.
Yep.
Yeah. It was either my set or RJ that ended up getting... Ended up getting the room shut down. So I fucking bombed super hard.
What happened? The room got shut down because of one of your performances?
Yeah.
What show was this at?
Both of them, wasn't it?
North Sydney. It wasn't both of them. But anyway.
You got a whole gig cancelled because of your material.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of impressive, but...
It was North Sydney. It was North Sydney and someone complained.
How long ago was this?
This is like last year.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, it was one of Legacy's gigs. He's like, oh, I'll throw you a bone. You can have this gig. You can do some new material. Got up there. Halfway through my set, the only reaction I got was a lady sighing. Just...
And has Kyle Legacy... given you another gig since?
I haven't asked for one. No, thank you. Thanks, but no thanks. Anyway, so, like, I get off stage, obviously just ate a huge bag of dicks up there, and Steph was just like, hey, dude, I just want you to know, like, that's not your material. She goes, it just wasn't your crowd. She goes, there's nothing wrong with your punchline. She goes, keep at it. Like, you're funny. Mm. Please, like, super, super nice. Gave me, like, some really good advice. And then just got up and crushed. Just crushed. And I was like, well, it wasn't the crowd then, was it?
Well, but, I mean, the thing she said was it wasn't your crowd, right?
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly, exactly.
It was a crowd that likes comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, so, look, if Steph ever hears this, like, 100% behind her, and I hope, like, I think after this experience, she'll come out better and like, opportunities will open up for her. Because, you know, any publicity is good publicity at the end of the day. Like, when she's through everything, and I know it hasn't been easy for her, when she's through everything, it's going to be such a great experience for her. Fucking my heart goes out to her. I hope she's okay. And yeah, she's a
well. I mean, the
legend.
Good news is she's still gigging, so hopefully she's just working through it, and she'll be back bigger and better than ever.
Yeah, the material that she's going to write about this is going to be fucking killer as well.
For sure.
Yeah,
well, it's tragedy plus time.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Have a bit more time.
Yeah,
she'll be fucking ripping into those people. Because those fucking internet trolls, dude. Like, they're brutal. Yeah. They'll get everyone. They'll get all of us.
Oh, they're fucking...
At one time or another.
It gets me, even when it's like a handful of people calling me. Like, I put on a lot of weight between, like, shoots, between the one I did before Melbourne and after, because I drank so much beers and had so many burgers in Melbourne. I put on, like, 6 or 7 kilos. So then the next shoot, all these comments were like, did Andrew eat Andrew? And, like, how fat is this cunt?
You're reading the comments?
And I'm like, and it was only, like, maybe 5 or 6 comments.
Yeah.
But that still gets me. And I'm like, okay, so that's 5 comments that bothered me. Imagine if it was 5,000 or 50,000, like it was for Steph.
Yeah.
You can imagine that would just eat away at you.
It's fucked.
Yeah.
It's fucked. We did some videos for a show we did in Dubbo, and there was one comment on this skit I shot, and it was just fat cunt. That's all it was. Like, it was your uncle.
Yeah. I was going to say. Yeah.
Who was also a fat cunt.
Yeah.
So it was like fat on fat crime.
I was like, fucking Jesus. So I was like, whatever, I'm happy for the comment. It'll get it slightly higher in the algorithm.
Yeah.
So, plus half my material is about being a fat cunt.
Most of the time when it's someone saying something fucked, it's usually someone with 0 followers and like they're and even their profile picture is not their face. It's like a dog or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, it's some fucking loser with a shit life that just likes to project onto other people.
Yeah.
That's most internet haters.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't find anyone who's like absolutely killing it, making millions of dollars a year, going, oh, fuck, I'm just going to go like just really like hate on a few people on the internet.
That unless you're Mark Bentley.
Yeah. My dad will do that. Yeah. He'll fucking let people know.
Yeah. Ethan's dad's rich as fuck.
Yeah.
But a
psycho. Yeah. We'll still tell people how they're paying too much for coffee when we should be saving our money. The classic boomer fucking argument.
Old man Bentley's a tosspot, is he?
Yeah.
He loves it.
Big time. Loves it. Gives me all the hot riffs. You could use that in your set. I'm like, no, I can't.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. I don't think all the women in the crowd would enjoy that one. Usually something fucking... usually something fucked or another thing. Anyway, we've just hit an hour. Podcast usually goes for an hour, man.
Cool.
Last segment we usually do is material you're working on. So anything brand new that you haven't really tested out yet?
There's a couple of things I wrote today because I just went over to my brother's place for lunch, right?
Yeah.
And he's got 3 kids. And one of my nephews was just like having a bit of a sulk. You know how like young kids can be just sulky for no particular reason.
Yeah.
And so he went over and was like whispering to him. And I was just made me think about like, you know, those situations where you're with like someone who's a parent and they're whispering to the kid in a social setting.
Yeah.
And you don't really know what they're whispering. And also, and I can't really remember what in similar situations my parents would have been whispering to me.
Yeah.
But maybe like think about like it's probably a good thing I'm not a parent, because, like, if I was the one whispering, I'd be like, now listen here, little fucking turd. You go and eat your lunch or I'm going to fucking beat the shit out of you. Like, like, I don't know. It just made me think, fantasize about, like, what, like, I wouldn't be a good parent.
Yeah.
But just the idea of exploring for the fantasy of what you would whisper to your kid when they're being a little shithead.
Yeah.
Versus, like, you know, what the person who's there is actually saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something. It was also, like, my niece and nephew, who are, like, very young, were, like, just wrestling and something, and they were, like, pushing each other. And then I heard them say something like, "Giny," and then my brother's wife was like, "No touching of the giny." Right? And I'm like, another reason why I'm glad I'm not a parent.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, having tell you.
You just punched me in the giny.
Yeah. No, yeah, niece and nephew, like, no hitting of the giny. Like, that, yeah, there's just all these conversations about being a parent that I am very happy that I don't have to explore right now.
Yeah, that there's no privacy with parents or anything like that. It's
There was also something I was thinking about when I was walking here, which was that, like, I'm 37 now and I'm single and I've got no kids. And, like, when a woman gets 37 and they're single and they've got no kids, then people start to wonder why, what's wrong with them. Whereas when a guy is single with no kids, most people don't wonder why. They can usually tell. Like, they can usually tell pretty early on, like, oh, that's why. You know, that's what's wrong with this cunt.
Yeah.
You know?
Or they think, fucking legend, he's doing it right.
Yeah, I mean, that's true as well. But that was something which I thought I want to go home and write a bit more about, because there is definitely a different way that people think of a man and a woman at the same age and stage in life.
Yeah.
So anyway, there are a couple of ideas that I came up with today that I was like, I'm going to go away and play around with.
Yeah, they're hilarious. What about you, Ethan? You working on anything, mate?
Oh, I did this fucking joke the other night at the Stag, and it was like a crowd of six, and then like another six walked in, so pretty small crowd.
Well, it hit double digits.
Double digits, yeah.
That's a show.
I mean, that, for Sydney, you'd be like, that's fucking red hot for an open mic.
Yeah.
And so then you come here on a Tuesday at the open mic.
I've seen the photos.
It's insane.
What draws so many people here to the open mic?
There's no other comedy clubs. And comedy's such a popular thing now.
But it's free entry?
Yeah.
Free entry.
That helps.
And then, what is it, cheap drinks or something like that?
No. Just regular price drinks.
Holy shit. Yeah. And how long does every performer get?
Five minutes.
Yeah. Because that's good, because, like, there's ones in Sydney, like in Newtown, right, Caesar's one, which I think has gotten so busy that, like, they're doing, like, three-minute sets. And so, like, if I was to come to Newcastle to do the open mic, I'd do it for five, but I wouldn't do it for, like, less than that, because it's a long way to come for fucking four minutes, three minutes.
You know? Yeah.
But sorry, go ahead with this gig.
Yeah, the best way you can do that is do this on the Tuesday and the week where the Stag's on the Wednesday.
Yeah.
So you get two Wednesday overnight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I had the crowd on side, like, everyone's fucking bombing all night. It was brutal. And I got them on side, just crowd working. And I was like, all right, I'll tell you, it's like the most fuck joke that I wrote. It was just one in my phone. I'm just like, something that I wrote down. I was just like, the worst thing you can call someone in Australia, like a really bad insult, is to call them a dog cunt.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't understand what that means. I take it as a compliment. What are you trying to say? I'm super fuckable? It didn't go well. I really ran it into the ground right at the end there. It's just like, I don't know why I wrote that in my phone. It was like something just popped into my head.
It's a real thinking man's joke, that one.
Yeah,
a
real dumb fucking joke.
It's right up my alley. That's why I laughed. I was like, that's a great joke.
The other one I had was on inflation. I was like, yeah, everyone's complaining about inflation. I've been suffering. I just bought one of those butt plugs so you can fucking blow up. It's just the dumbest shit.
Inflatable butt plug.
Oh, yeah.
Do they exist?
Yeah. You can fucking...
You haven't been on the internet in a while, man, have you?
Yeah. Not to the inflatable butt plug.
Yeah. Don't open that door. All right, trust me.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, what do you got? I've got a... That's one of my jokes, is like... it's like, oh, yeah, you're scrolling through the internet, you see something fucked, and you're like, oh, but your dick's like, ooh. Gosh, shit. I'm going to trick my wife into this. But, yeah. Trying to write a joke. I just recently lost one of my dogs. I had to put him down. It's fucking awful. Super sad. But I was like, thinking about it, I was like, oh, fuck. At least it wasn't the favourite of the two dogs.
Yeah.
It's like, me and Tanya are both said that. I was like, oh, fuck. At least it wasn't Tyson. Tyson's a way cooler dog. Kojak was lovely. He's my German Shepherd, but he was fucking inbred and he snorted when he breathed and he wasn't very smart or coordinated.
Yeah. I imagine some parents feel like that about their kids.
Well, that's where the joke's going. Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, I was like, fuck, it was too brutal talking about a dead dog and then be like, oh, at least it wasn't the favourite or whatever. Mm. But I was like, but my parents definitely would have favourites. Mm. It's like, I'm 31 years old, fucking comedian with three failed careers under my belt, but my brother's got a top knot and a receding hairline. So my little brother, But it's like, yeah, it's like clearly I'm the favourite because my little brother's wears a top knot. That was the joke. Anyway,
I reckon you just need to be more honest and be like, I have a house and I have a fucking wife, and he's retarded.
I think with the dog, I mean, everyone hates hearing bad things happen to dogs, right?
Yeah,
everyone
exactly.
Likes dogs. So I think, you know, it's almost like you have to make out that the dog that died was like a total cunt or like it's like a villain.
Yeah.
just to be able to justify talking about the dog dying or something. Because so many chicks, it's like, oh, a dog died. I don't worry, it wasn't a favourite. Like, oh. So
exactly.
And he bit a child.
Oh, this dog is so fucking dumb. he had this super intimidating bark. He's a big German Shepherd. Mm. He actually stopped our neighbor's car getting him broken into. We used to have this tiny little fence too. Super intimidating. They'd lean on, he'd jump up on the fence. He'd look like he could jump the fence and he'd bark like fucking growl, all this shit. But he'd hear someone walking past the house and he'd be in such a rush to get to the front to bark at them that. And he was so dumb, he couldn't slow down in time. So he'd just fucking run into the fence.
That's so funny.
So people, all they would see is they're walking their dog by the thing, they hear this huge bang. Crash. Fuck. And then, rah, 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 and they're like, holy fuck. And then they look over and he's standing on a 3-foot-tall fence just barking at them. They're like, holy fuck, that dog's going to kill me.
Sounds like you're being chased by a werewolf or something. Yeah, fucking hell. Hear this bang.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fucking horrific. And
you'd want to have a strong fence for that, right?
Dude, I don't know.
He was too dumb to jump the fence, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, that was it. Yeah, yeah. But he was just fucking showing you what's up. He was a good dog, old Kojak. Fucking dumb as dog shit, though. So right, dumb. Man. Yeah, rest in peace, Kojak. We love you. We miss you.
Let's wrap
anyway,
it up.
Anyway, you got any shows to plug in the next few weeks?
To your Queensland listeners, I'm going to the Gold Coast.
We got two of them.
I'm doing a Goldie from like the 10th to the 16th of July.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to Brisbane, doing my first Brisbane tour.
Yeah.
For a week. I'm doing my solo show at the Good Chat Comedy Club. So that'll be fun. Yeah, it's my first time doing any Queensland gigs, so I'm pretty keen to see what they're like. I think hopefully... they're pretty bogan in Queensland. I think jail material should go all right.
I think it'll be sweet.
Yeah, you'll be all right, especially down south as well, towards the border. It's pretty good. So
yeah.
Ethan, you got anything to plug?
I just want to plug the Newcastle Comedy Club because they've been fucking looking after me. I've lost my job filling up vending machines for my mate, which is what I was doing fucking part-time. So they've been fucking looking after me. I've emceed Tuesday, last night. I'm emceeing again tonight. Fucking massive shout out to James and Elliot and Brady. Mad cunts. Keeping me afloat, keeping the rent paid.
But yeah. Good on them.
I love the fucking, like, chasing the money to pay my rent doing comedy. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm loving life. It's rough right now.
Just the stress.
All my money just goes to food and rent and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't buy anything else and fuel.
Survival.
But, yeah, survival mode. Things, mate. And I'm fucking happy.
Yeah. I'm also doing are you guys doing anything for Sydney Fringe Festival?
Nah.
I'm doing a show, I think, the last days of August, the start of September, called Andrew Hamilton Doesn't Mention Prison.
Ooh, Fuck.
It's it's going to be a new solo show. Yeah. You saw some of it last night.
Yeah, dude.
It's going to be an hour of that. So
mad.
Yeah, I thought I better. I've only written fucking like 15 minutes of it so far, but I thought I better throw myself in the deep end and just put my hand up for a work in progress show.
Yeah.
And then hopefully I can figure it out by then. But yeah, it's going to be an entire show non-prison gear.
Yeah, yeah, sick. And I fucking suck. People don't book me, so I got nothing to plug. I've been turning gigs down because I'm so fucking off my material lately.
Yeah, you turned down the Cabba gig, which, I'll plug that.
Yeah.
On July 6th, Cabba's gig, Edalong, Bar Edalong. It's sold out, so don't even fucking worry about it. It's going to be sick.
Nice. Yeah.
You missed it.
How are you going?
60.
Nice.
Yeah.
Captain done well.
You turned it down.
Cabba called me the night after my boss came to see me. And I was a little bit in my own head.
Yeah,
he's
fair
like,
enough.
Oh, mate, I've got this show. And I'm like, look, man, you don't want me ruining your show with my material. I said, I'm going to fucking turn half the crowd.
I know someone else will ruin it for you.
I was like, I'll turn half
the
crowd.
I've got quite a list, actually.
I said, it's so high risk, dude, and I don't know how they're going to perceive me. I said, but Ethan's got this new gear. He's rolling. I said, it's fucking like one of your bits looks like it should already be on a fucking Netflix special. It's that good. I said, he's a little bit high risk. I said, he's probably going to be a better choice. Give Ethan a call. Mm. And he's like, all right, mate. And then 2 weeks later, people are like, why the fuck did you turn that down, you idiot? Like, this big opportunity for you. And I was like, yeah, I'm a fucking idiot. I was like, god damn it.
Yeah.
Cabba, well, I'll fucking do the next one. I'm sorry, mate. I was just in my own head.
Yeah.
It's all part of the learning process.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. This is a great one.
No worries, boys.
It was a lot of fun.
Cheers, man.
We learn a lot. And check us out on Your Joke and Old Mate Bentley on Instagram. Don't even follow me on Instagram. And I posts, so we'll fucking catch you later.
See ya.